Many of us might call to mind one of those summary statements in which the truth of our tradition is distilled so clearly. These statements are so memorable because they capture the essence of our faith. Like when the scribes test Jesus by interrogating his knowledge of the law, and he responds that the whole tradition can be explained in this way: that you love the Lord your God with your whole heart, soul, strength, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. We remember this passage because in one phrase it summarizes the whole life and work of Jesus Christ and the tradition in which he stands. Similarly, Micah, known to us by a summary statement, and what does the Lord require of you but that you do justice and love kindness and walk humbly with your God? Now, nobody here, I think it's a fair guess, actually knows anything about Micah. It's a fair bet that many of us would struggle to find Micah in the Old Testament. Indeed, I had never read the whole book of Micah cover to cover until recently. And yet still, so many of us treasure these words because they summarize the prophetic tradition in which Micah stood and speak so directly to our faith, a faith that is also committed to social justice. So let me tell you a little bit about who Micah was. He was concerned with agrarian interests. He celebrated household life among families. He spoke up for small farmers and condemned the wicked rulers who applied censurious taxes on the little guy. Micah treasured the places where people lived and labored. He advocated for Sabbath rest. And he had little patience for solutions that came from the city or from other prophets peddling some new pathway to God. In other words, Micah was Wendell Berry. Concerned with the environment, interested in people and place, a little poetic, a little cantankerous. It may be that we remember Micah 6:8, to do justice, to love kindness, to walk humbly with God, because it's about the only verse in the whole book of Micah safe to share in polite company. Micah's public speech was very aggressive. Take, for example, his devastating critique of civil government. His description of the king is horrific. It's like a scene from one of those old German fairy tales that make children cry. Speaking of the magistrate, Micah said, "You tear the skin off my people and the flesh off their bones. You chop them up like meat in a kettle, like flesh in a cauldron. So is the relationship of the king to the small farmers that Micah spoke for." He was no more tolerant of the priests who ran the temple, those priests who enriched themselves on the sacrifices of poor farmers working the land. Micah lived in this ancient system of sacrifices and offerings, and the temple was always demanding more as a way of satisfying and pleasing and influencing God. Micah says that the priests abuse this system for selfish purposes, and his words here drip with sarcasm. "With what shall I come before the Lord now?" he asks. "Will the Lord be pleased with 1,000 rams? Or with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Will the Lord be pleased if I sacrifice my firstborn child?" In other words, when will the priests conclude that we have given God enough? And who are they to make that judgment? It was the self-importance and the self-righteousness that really set Micah off. The priests seemed to be so unaware that their authority was arbitrary, and yet they enforced the biblical law with the most unmerciful strictness. David Rui used to say that our best offerings are like refrigerator art for God anyway. Oh, they've sacrificed a calf for me today. Let me find my scotch tape. The choir singing holy, holy, holy. Put that on the refrigerator. But most withering is Micah's work. Most unexpected was Micah's work with his peers and his colleagues. You know, we expect prophets to go after the civil government. There's always a William Barber to preach against the president. And we expect prophets to go after the self-righteous priests who run the temple. Every generation has its Martin Luther or its Dorothy Day seeking religious reforms. But how hard is it to find a religious leader to say something harsh about the Senate this week or the Pope? To Micah, these prophets are a dime a dozen. Prophets, though, are not supposed to go after other prophets. And that's where Micah is doing something new and bold. He belongs to a school of prophets that raises up people to preach against the government and the temple cult. But he says that there's this new class of prophets, professional prophets who have come and started to lead his people astray. He seems to be talking about some new prophets who aren't bound by the old ethical standards. They're using some sensational new techniques. They're making dubious promises that they won't be able to deliver on. So Micah says to them, even the most virtuous among us can lose our way. Even if we have all the right commitments and all the right values, we might still lose sight of the community to which we belong. Even if the work we are doing is good, it may be that our motives are not pure. What's so withering about Micah is that he turns his prophetic speech toward everybody. The rulers give judgment for a bribe. The priests teach for a price. The prophets now give oracles for money. And all of them lean upon the Lord and say, "Surely God is with us." Look deeper, Micah says, and we will see that all of us fall short of the glory of God. We can see the problem with the king. We've noticed the errors in the priesthood. But can we look within ourselves? For we may also be vulnerable to the self-seduction that has led these others astray. Micah's summary of the law, then, what does the Lord require of you? Comes from Micah's familiarity with the corruption of righteous people. I have always heard this text as a clarion call to work for justice, to change the world. But when we consider this verse in the context of Micah's larger message, what stands out is his humility to do justice, to love kindness, such active words, to walk humbly with God. I think that's really why this verse has so much staying power. For the Christian tradition summons us both to courageous and purposeful action in the world, and also to prayerful, deep, inner lives of confession and listening. The Christian tradition calls us to marshal both our extraordinary capabilities and to remember our limitations, to use the power that we hold to make change and to embrace our interdependency and the contingencies in which we live. There is a wealth of wisdom in this summary of the Christian faith. Our church has received a lot of recognition in recent weeks for the good work that we are doing in our community. Just before Christmas, we used our racial justice covenant to make a public statement concerning the university's settlement with the Sons of Confederate Veterans. We were the first local church to do this, and nobody really noticed until several African American churches joined us the week before the King holiday. And soon the local press was calling and student reporters were asking for interviews. There was a great article last week in the Daily Tar Heel about why a church would bother to make a public statement about something like race. We were also recognized once again recently for our environmental commitments. I gave an interview on the solar panel installation, explaining how it came about, why we did it, how many folks in the church were involved in making this possible. A big part of my job is to tell the story of the church's mission. I'm supposed to represent United Church to the media and to project our work out into the community. And to be honest, sometimes I feel pretty uncomfortable with that. I don't like how speaking to the media suggests that I have a larger role in some of these things than I really do. But the other reason I'm sometimes uncomfortable with it is that in this cultural moment, we see so much moral chest thumping. It's so easy to contrast ourselves with others whom we see as wicked or ignorant or foolish. We want other people to know that we're one of the good guys. But we don't want to come across as preachy or self-righteous. So when I talk about our work in the community, our commitments to racial justice, our Earth Ministries work, even our concerns with the immigrant experience or LGBTQ people, it occurs to me that to faithfully represent the church that I serve, I have to find ways of talking about these things with humility. So I actually find myself explaining again and again and again what it means to be a covenant community. Why do we do all these things? Well, not because we're so perfect or because we are without sin. We do all these things because we are trying to listen faithfully to God who has been faithful to us. We have heard God's promises. We are created in God's image. And so we respond to this grace that we have received by living faithfully, by taking action where we can to care for creation, by advocating for others and for standing for justice where we are able to. If we stick to the language of covenant, then we can do justice with humility. For in this way, we remember the promises of a faithful God. We remember that the real power belongs to God. We remember that our work is really nothing apart from God. That's Micah. That's Micah who prophesies to the prophets, "Be not seduced with self-flattery. Be not corrupted like the kings and the priests." Just remember this, the essential summary of the law. To love the Lord with our whole hearts, with our whole selves, and to love our neighbors as if they are us. Or as Micah had put it previously, do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God. Amen.